This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
For this month's Job Bite, I'm interviewing Professor Ian Brown, who is now an Emeritus Professor at the Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. So welcome. I don't think we've interviewed you before somehow, although we probably should have done.
No, I've escaped so far.
So I understand that since technically retiring, you now have rather more time to spend on the sorts of projects that you like. So what are you working on at the moment?
Well, my main project, actually, is something we call BINGO, which is a cosmology project. And the basic idea is we want to build a novel type of radio telescope, special-purpose radio telescope, to measure something called baryonic acoustic oscillations. So I'm going back to the beginning. There was a Big Bang, and for the first 400,000 years of the universe, while it was expanding, the universe was opaque. It was a plasma, and in that plasma, sound waves propagated. And at a time about 400 years after the Big Bang, the universe became transparent. The fog cleared, and those waves stopped propagating. The maximum wavelength of those waves is determined by essentially the light travel time across the universe at 400,000 years after the Big Bang.
So this is as the universe is expanding as
yes.
well?
Yes, so the universe is expanding, it's opaque to start with, and then at 400,000 years after the Big Bang, it becomes transparent because the electrons and the neutrons and the protons combine to produce atoms, and light is no longer absorbed. There is a wavelength set by the physical conditions when the universe became transparent, and that maximum wavelength is about 150 megaparsecs.
So pretty big, much bigger than a galaxy then.
Much bigger than a galaxy, but it was essentially the light travel time across the universe at the time the fog cleared. So we actually see the imprint of those waves in the cosmic microwave background radiation, and that's been studied intensively over the last 20 years, most recently by the Planck satellite. And if you take what we call a power spectrum of the distribution of fluctuations in the microwave background, we see a lovely peak corresponding to about 150 megaparsecs. Since then, the universe has gone on expanding. Matter has contracted under gravity, producing the galaxies and structures that we see today. But there's a memory of that wavelength still in the distribution of matter, both luminous and dark matter in the universe. And it has that fixed linear scale. And so what we want to do with BINGO is actually to measure that scale in the relatively nearby universe after the galaxies have formed. And this scale gives us what we call a standard ruler. Cosmologists like standard rulers or standard candles, something that has a fixed size or a fixed luminosity that they can see at different distances. And it's these baryon acoustic oscillations that we're going to use to study the geometry of the universe and hopefully to tell us something about dark energy.
So people have done this previously by actually mapping where galaxies are, and it seems extraordinary, but you're saying there's literally an imprint in the way that galaxies are scattered about the universe.
That's right. If you take an individual galaxy, then if you go out 150 megaparsecs away from it, that you will find that there's an overdensity compared with random, about 1% at that kind of linear scale. So it's a fairly subtle effect, and that's why it's a challenge, and people are only just starting to do this kind of measurement. It's already been established that you can see the signal using optical galaxies. To do it optically, you need a big telescope. You need to survey a huge number of galaxies, millions of galaxies, measure their redshifts. This is in some sense, a brute force way of doing it, because once you've measured all the distributions where they are in angle and in distance, you average the signal from all those galaxies together to see this subtle density perturbation. The clever thing about what we want to do is what we call intensity mapping. We actually exploit the fact that a radio telescope has very poor resolution. So when we point a radio telescope at the sky, we don't just see the emission from one galaxy, but we see the integrated emission from hundreds, maybe thousands of galaxies, depending on how far away those galaxies are from us. And the nice thing about the radio is that neutral hydrogen gas emits a spectral line of arrest wavelength of 21 centimeters. And so we can use the emission from this neutral hydrogen to probe the three-dimensional distribution of hydrogen gas in the universe and use that as a tracer of matter in general.
And that hydrogen still makes up most of the universe that we can actually detect?
Yes, hydrogen is the most abundant element in the universe. It's not all neutral, in fact. A modest fraction is neutral, and that's what we're studying, because that's what emits this 21 centimeter emission line. That's the rest frequency of the line. If we take a radio telescope, take a spectrum of the emission that we see, and we see a feature at a certain wavelength longer than 21 centimeters, that gives us the redshift and hence a distance.
So that would be emission coming from somewhere distant from us and the expansion of the universe while that 21 centimeter radiation has been travelling has stretched it to a longer wavelength.
Sure. So, what we want to study is, roughly speaking, is where the wavelength, rather than 21 centimeters, has been stretched to about 30 centimeters.
So you're looking at a specific area of the universe?
An area both in direction but also in distance or redshift.
And how will that be done specifically with Bingo? Because it's an unusual sort of design, isn't it, for a telescope?
It's an unusual design. So it's a special purpose telescope designed with this idea specifically in mind. And we want to make it cheap and simple. So we don't want it to have any moving parts. Because we're working at a relatively long wavelength, we can actually manage with room temperature amplifiers rather than cryogenically cool ones. And the design we've come up with is a two-mirrored design with a very long effective focal length. And the reason we want a very long effective focal length, that gives our telescope a relatively wide field of view. So most radio telescopes have a modest field of view, and you can put typically one, maybe several receivers, essentially pixels on the sky. We want to have 50 or 60 pixels on the sky, so simultaneously we can observe a large area. And since the telescope has no moving parts, we just sit there and let the Earth scan the telescope across the sky. So we want to map a strip of sky about 10 degrees wide.
And when you map that and you get the hydrogen emission, how will you measure the baryon acoustic oscillations in that? And what might it tell you that other methods perhaps aren't sensitive to?
To see the hydrogen emission, we have to work hard to start with, and that's one of the reasons why this kind of experiment hasn't been done before, because the hydrogen emission is not the only source of emission in the sky. We have emission from our own galaxy, we have emission from extragalactic radio sources, and also, if we're unlucky, we'll have man-made interference. So, in order to get at the signal in the first place, we have to try and separate out the hydrogen signal from these other foreground, background sources of radiation. And the way we do that, essentially, is to use the fact that the foreground emission, the confusing emission, has a very smooth spectrum, doesn't have any features in it. But the hydrogen emission, because it's a line emission, has frequency structure. So let's assume that we can actually get rid of all these nasty, confusing emissions, and we've got a map of the hydrogen distribution, then what we do is to look for characteristic frequencies or scales within our map. And the way we analyze such a map is to essentially do a Fourier transform to obtain a power spectrum. It measures the power in various wavelengths.
Those are spatial
wavelengths, yes. And because we have redshift information, then actually it's a three-dimensional distribution that we have. So we essentially do a three-dimensional power spectrum.
And from that, then, you're saying it's about cosmology and it's partly about dark energy. Yeah. So how do you investigate dark energy through this?
Well, when we've got our hydrogen power spectrum, what we expect to see is a characteristic big peak corresponding to a linear scale of 150 megaparsecs. What we do is measure what the angular size of that peak is, or what angular size that corresponds to. And what we can do is to see what angular scale that corresponds to at a whole series of redshifts. Bingo itself will cover a smallish range, but significant range of redshifts. Optical surveys cover different ranges of redshift, somewhat higher, and the cosmic microwave background studies measure that scale at a redshift of 1,000. So we're looking at the angular scale corresponding to 150 megaparsecs at various different epochs of the universe. If you like, we can produce a Hubble diagram of the angular scale as a function of redshift. And how the angular scale varies with redshift depends on our cosmological model. And one of the key elements in cosmological models at the moment, cosmological models in general, is the amount of dark energy present that affects the way the geometry of the universe changes with redshift. And that's really what we're trying to focus on.
So you're sort of looking at whether dark energy is now really driving the expansion of the universe at recent times?
We're pretty confident dark energy is driving the acceleration of the expansion of the universe at the present epoch. What we don't know is whether this dark energy, we don't know anything about this dark energy, really. We have evidence that it exists. We don't know whether its effects has remained constant with epoch or it changes with epoch. And that's one of the things that we hope to study, to see whether it's constant. If it's constant, then it's the equivalent of what Einstein invented in his general theory of relativity over 100 years ago, his so-called cosmological constant. So it could be that it's just a constant of the universe, and we have to try and understand why that constant has the value it has. Or it could be that it is something that isn't constant, varies with the epoch of the universe, and there must be some physics behind that. So it's exciting either way. We're ignorant at the moment. We want a bit more knowledge.
Fantastic. Well, maybe as a last thing, I was just thinking that this telescope, as you said, is relatively inexpensive. It's slightly against perhaps the current trend in the sense that it's a specific job that it's doing and it's not supposed to be an all-purpose instrument. Is this something that could have been built before, or is it the case that before anybody knew about dark energy, it wouldn't have been in anyone's mind to build a telescope like this?
I think it's is a telescope of its time. Over the last 10 years, the realization that dark energy is real and something to be studied has emerged. The other thing that makes it a telescope of its time is that actually to extract the signal that we're after, we'll need quite sophisticated data processing. And in fact, many of the techniques that we will use have actually been developed in the last few years by people studying the cosmic microwave background, because there also they need to remove foreground emission from the galaxy. Apart from computing power and analysis techniques, in terms of technology, the telescope could have been built 20 or 30 years ago. The only clever thing we say about the telescope is the system, not the individual parts.
Wonderful. Well, I think we can wrap it up there. Actually, just the very last question. What does BINGO actually stand for? I never asked you.
That's a good question. I have to try and remember. So the B comes from B for baryonic acoustic oscillations. So BINGO stands for baryon acoustic oscillations from integrated neutral gas observations.
Okay. Well, a good convoluted acronym is always a bonus.
Yes. So it stuck for some reason.
Okay, well, thank you very much for telling us about that.
Thank you.